that a kingdom as powerful as Media, less than a century after its first rise to independence and greatness, might once again be prostrated and subjected to foreign domination must, to many, have seemed implausible. But this, as the Medes themselves had good cause to know, had always been the baneful rhythm of the region's power play. Great empires rising, great empires falling. In the Near East, predators lurked everywhere, sniffing the air for weakness, awaiting their opportunity to strike. Many of these, just like the Medes themselves, were Aryans, nomads who had left little trace of their migrations upon the records of the time. In 843 BC, for instance, the Assyrians had campaigned in the mountains north of their kingdom against a tribe they called the Parsua. 2 centuries later, a people with a very similar name had established themselves far to the south on the ruins of the venerable kingdom of Anshan, between the lower reaches of the Zagros and the sweltering coastlands of the Gulf. So it was that what had once been Anshan came gradually to be known by a quite different name, Parsa, Persia, the land of the Persians. In 559 BC, while Astyages still ruled in Media, a young man came to the throne of this upstart kingdom. The name of this king of Anshan was Cyrus, and he had claimed his throne as his people's greatest chieftain, head of the Achaemenids, the leading family of the Pasargadae, the leading Persian tribe. His attributes also included a hook nose, immense ambition, and quite limitless ability. From even before his birth, it appeared, Cyrus had been marked out for greatness. For it was he, if the stories are to be believed, who had been prophesied as the bane of Median greatness. Astyages was supposed to have seen it all in a dream, a vision of his daughter, Mandane, urinating, the golden stream flowing without cease, until at last the whole of Media had been drowned. When the king had reported this the next morning, his Magian dream readers had turned pale and warned him that any son of Mandane would be destined to imperil the Median throne. Hurriedly, Astyages had married off his daughter to a vassal, a Persian, the prince of a backward and inconsequential kingdom, hoping in that way to defeat the omen's malice. But after Mandane had fallen pregnant, Astyages had dreamed a second time. Now he saw a vine emerging from between his daughter's legs, nor did it stop growing until all Asia was in its shade. Panic-stricken, Astyages had waited for his grandson Cyrus to be born, and then immediately given orders that the boy be put to death. As invariably happens in such stories, the orders had been defied. The baby had been abandoned on a mountainside and somehow survived. Once he had grown to a splendid manhood, his natural nobility of character had served to win him the Persian throne. Thus it was that all the wiles of Astyages had been foiled, and the empire of the Medes been doomed. His potential was evidently sufficient to alarm Astyages. In 553 BC, he mustered his fearsome horsemen and struck south. Heavily outnumbered, the Persians resisted ferociously. When it appeared that surrender was imminent, even their women took to the battlefield to encourage Cyrus and his warriors to fight on. For 3 years the conflict convulsed the Zagros, and then suddenly, in 550 BC, it was over. Harpagus, commander of the Median army, and most prominent of the clan chiefs, had deserted to Cyrus, leading a rebellion in mid-battle and taking Astyages captive. But why such treachery? It was Harpagus, according to the Medes, who had been charged with the murder of the infant Cyrus. Years later, when his dissembling had at last emerged, Astyages was rumoured to have wreaked a bloody revenge, butchering Harpagus's son, jointing the corpse, and then serving it dressed as mutton to the unsuspecting father. Harpagus had remained a loyal, if chastened, servant of his king. Or so he had pretended. The kings of Assyria, honing the traditional rites of conquest to a peak of savagery, had prescribed unspeakable cruelties for defeated enemies, but Cyrus preferred the course of mercy. He resisted the temptation to treat the Medians as slaves. Even Astyages, rather than being impaled, was pensioned off into princely retirement. True, the treasury was emptied and its contents carted away to Anshan, but the polychrome city Ecbatana was otherwise spared the fate of Nineveh. Cyrus had no intention of destroying the most strategically sited city in the Zagros. The most pleasant, too, for in summer, while the lowlands of Persia burned, Ecbatana was a paradise of greenness. Not only did the city remain the capital of Media, but it became, during the broiling summer months, the effective capital of Cyrus's whole empire. No wonder that the Medes were able to feel, if not exactly the equals of their conquerors, then at least associates in the great adventure of their new king's reign. And that adventure, as events were soon exhilaratingly to prove, had only just begun. The downfall of a king as great as Astyages had sent shockwaves throughout the whole Near East. Not only the Median Empire, but the decades-old international status quo had been left in rubble. Suddenly, it seemed to the neighbouring great powers there was everything to play for.